Ingram Smith, Bud Elliott, back again with another episode of the Nolecast. Bud, hey, it is a post-victory Nolecast. Victory at home, even. So
dilly.
I'm sure there's plenty of things that we'll be critical of, but at the same time, always a little easier to push the button, have the red light turn on, and know that at least the immediate result is one that ended with a W. So happy to be able to look back. Nice win, even if it certainly wasn't super enjoyable finish, but nice win to get, and maybe let you have a place where maybe you can crawl your way back into 500 by the end of the year or something like that. So excited for the conversation tonight. We'll try to not spend a ton of time on Syracuse, but look back at the game that was. It's worth reminding ourselves that we only get to play so many of these games, and maybe just breezing over them isn't the best thing to do. But at the same time, the bigger story here is, and has been for a couple weeks, isn't necessarily whether or not a tackle was able to hook this in or who ran the right route. There's much larger macro things at play. So we'll try our do best to balance those two, and want to start podcasts like we do all of them, and thank our sponsor, Louisiana Hot Sauce. Great product, great partner for us. Been able to raise the consistency and quality in which we get to do these things, and I would say that it gets to raise the consistency and quality of the meals that you put on your plate, or you get to enjoy at your desk or work or wherever it may be. So please do keep them in mind, and thank you to so many of you that have gone out of your way to thank them on social media here in the last 3 or 4 days. Much appreciated.
Indeed, man. A great sponsor, a great company, and a great product for us. So we definitely appreciate you all using them, and all the love you give them on social media as well. So that's pretty awesome.
All right, man. So like I said, we'll jump into Syracuse here, and you know, obviously probably the first story of the day is one that they won, but two, if it's not the victory, it's the performance that you got out of your freshman running back. So let's start there, and we'll work our way around a couple other things that stood out to us.
Cam Akers just awesome on the day. I mean, almost 200 yards, just barely scratching the surface of his potential, really. If you listen to Jimbo after the game and some of the comments he made on other media, I listened to it. I'm like, man, I don't think he criticized anybody more than Cam Akers. And like he must think Cam Akers should have run for 350 yards. And going back and watching it, I don't know about 350, but he probably could have had about 275. I mean, if he presses a couple holes, you know, a little better, if he sees a couple holes a little better, if he cuts some balls outside that he decided to cut inside, if he stays inside on some stuff that he bounced, I mean, the kid's still learning to play running back, and yet he might set FSU's all-time freshman rushing record. I think that says something about how good he is. Offensive line run blocked pretty well in this game as well. Receivers, not so much, actually. That was a little disappointing. I got to tell you, man, watching Miami's receivers block, they're coached by Ron Dugans. He was a former Knoll. Those guys block. Florida State's guys, not so much.
It's a hit or miss. It's intermittent in its effort and successfulness.
But, you know, the problem with the hit or miss approach is that I don't need Aaron Judge at receiver, right? I don't need you to hit a home run or a strikeout. I really just need you to get the sacrifice bunt down with your receiver blocking. Just get in the guy's way enough, right? Like I don't need pancakes at receiver. Just chicken fight with him a little bit, and
just be an obstacle.
Yeah,
be out there, be within an area in which your running back can use you as a shield, or at least make you take a tougher angle to try to get to him. Just be present and be able to be there to let your running back use you in whatever way is possible.
I'm not trying to sit here and tell you that it's easy, but it's not quite as hard as Florida State receivers routinely make it look, right? There's kind of a happy medium to this. I don't want this to get in the way of our praise for Cam Akers, because he kind of was the offense on Saturday in the win. How about that? A win, man, or Syracuse. So that was cool. He's going to keep getting better and better, assuming he can stay healthy, knock on wood, and they're going to need him down the stretch. Ingram, with that, I believe it is time for our weekly How Many Yards Is Florida Giving Up to Run Opposing Running Back segment.
You're going to it particularly early this week. Absolutely.
Yeah, I mean, just out the gate, as Jimbo likes to say. Coming into this game, Florida was allowing 5.4 yards per carry to running backs.
I think Georgia's north of 8 yards a carry took it up to around five, right around there.
Okay,
north
so of they actually dipped a little bit this weekend. They allowed a 175 to Missouri's running backs,
right. Yes,
on 35 carries. So that was maybe a little bit of garbage time hurting that, perhaps, I think, with Missouri just kept trying to run down the clock at the end of the game. But Ingram, your total on the year, 230 carries, 1,217 rushing yards allowed to opposing running backs. That is good for 5.3 yards a carry. And okay. To put that in perspective here, let's see how many guys last season rushed for at least 5.3 yards a carry against Power 5 competition.
We have a pretty talented group of running backs, I imagine.
But yes. Deonte Foreman, who led the nation in rushing yards. Corey Clement of Wisconsin did not do it. 271 attempts, but he only had 4.4 average. So literally opposing running backs have been better against Florida than the Wisconsin kid was last year. Justin Jackson of Northwestern almost didn't do it. Dalvin Cook, he did it. Yeah. 249 attempts, 5.68 per carry. Pretty solid there. Christian McCaffrey, he also did it. And one guy named Saquon Barkley. So the three guys who last year against Power 5 competition, which UF is, had 230-plus carries and over 5.3 yards per carry. Dalvin Cook, Saquon Barkley, Christian McCaffrey. Holy. Yeah,
and that's just your average run-of-the-mill running back against University of Florida this year. Something to look forward to.
Indeed. That is something to that gives you to. Hope. Like, these teams don't do things all that well, but Cam Akers is a very good running back already. I think he has potential to be elite. And Florida does not seem all that interested in stopping the run consistently. They do kick a lot of field goals, so they have that in common. I know you like another running back, by the way.
Yeah, I was going to say before we move away, while we're talking about running backs, there's some things about Amir Rasul's game that he certainly has to clean up, and he'll get better with reps. But, man, to be somebody that's as fast as he is, I really like that Rasul seems to have this internal switch that goes from, I'm trying to hit a home run, I'm trying to hit a home run. Okay, I'm not going to be able to hit a home run here. I'm going to pick up the 3 or 4 yards that's left on the field for me. So I just like I like that kid appears to be a pretty good blend of speed and also a functional running back when he's not going to be able to hit some big hitter. So lot to be real optimistic about the running back position in general, but really am liking what I see out of Rasul as well. Great complimentary piece and. Hey, somebody else who the Florida Gators might have to worry about come into the month here.
You know, and Ingram, I totally agree with you on that. And I have some other positive things to say. I said this in the Instant Reaction show as well. I might change the title of that show to the post-game show because other people are stealing our line of Instant Reaction, which is kind of disappointing. There are a lot of different things you can call your show, guys. But I like the way that Jimbo Fisher managed James Blackman in this game. I think that he dialed some stuff back after the Boston College game. He gave him sort of more like designated read plays where he was only having to look at one guy or two guys before he took off, which I thought that was a very smart thing there. And to be honest, I don't think Blackman played all that bad. Now, watching Jimbo's coach's show, sometimes he'll give away some stuff. And one thing that he said was, you remember the deep ball to the backup fullback?
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, the Gabe Neighbors shot.
Curious there. However, Jimbo seemed to imply that those guys were just running clear outs and that the ball was supposed to go to the tight end on the delay and Blackman just didn't see him. Now, I'm guessing he didn't see him because he actually threw the ball to the guys who were running the clear out routes, right? Because I mean, which means he was looking at them and not the tight end. The fullback was actually kind of open on that. Blackman kind of missed him. However, that is just stuff that's going to happen with the freshman, you know? Like that to me is a play that Jimbo drew up to get the ball to Izzo, who was wide open. And your freshman quarterback instead decides to launch the ball to the backup fullback about 30 yards down the field, which, hey, you know what? I'm glad he's got the gumption to take those shots. I think two of the sacks were his fault. He missed a side adjustment on another, but he also did some good side adjustments in this game as far as getting the ball out hot against the blitz. He worked the wrong side of the field once or twice. Some of the stuff is just freshman mistakes that are going to happen. You know, it does seem like little errors doing this offense all the time, and they certainly did on third downs. But I saw some encouraging signs from James Blackman. I thought he threw the ball over the middle of the field better in this game than he did against Boston College, and so that was encouraging. O-line blocks some run plays really well. Pass protection seems to be an issue still, which is not good because they have to go to Clemson this week. But, you know, honestly, like, wasn't that bad. They couldn't string drives together, but they did hit explosive plays, which is what you have to do against Syracuse. And I got to tell you, man, I don't even feel about, like talking about the defense at all. You know, what's the point? Yeah. The vast majority of your best players are going to be gone for the draft next year. I got a feeling the vast majority or the entirety of the defensive coaching staff is going to be gone next year. If everybody's into look ahead mode, what are we doing? Like breaking down stuff, like when the goals for the season are shot. You know what I mean? Unless there's anybody on defense you really want to talk about, because we can do it. I mean, Naughty and Sweat were dominant up front. I thought those guys played just awesome games. Linebackers and secondary still don't communicate very well on pass coverage. You still got guys who can't line up right in secondary, and that's independent of tempo, by the way. That's just like not playing with a whole lot of football smarts, which to me is a reflection of coaching when you have like the whole secondary doing it. I don't know. You want to talk about defense or are you good?
Not really. Okay. No, I don't. I mean, I'll just say two things. The defense seems to be in a pretty well-established pattern that seemingly on the first set of downs or second set of downs of a drive, they'll get a team into third and long. Third and long gets blown, and shortly thereafter, the other team is scoring. 91 and 9 played really well. They've played consistently. Quality ball all year for them, for you, and I certainly respect them for that, and they're doing themselves a lot of favors. But no, not a whole lot to really talk about defense. Defense, just what you see out of Florida State's maddening. Three of the four final plays of the game on Syracuse's second-to-last drive, you're not lined up. You're not ready to play football when the ball snapped. What the hell are you doing? So, yeah, it's frustrating, man. And third and... You know, us making jokes on the podcast about other teams just need to intentionally find ways to get themselves into third and long, and that's really when their offense will start clicking. Is all the more frustrating as a fan to see play out just routinely. So the defense is, I don't have a ton to say about it, and it's a real disservice to the fan base to have this talented of a unit have this much kind of, I don't want to say animosity surrounding them, that's way too strong of a word, but for this talented of a unit to be this much of a blank show this deep in the year is a real frustrating thing to have to watch.
Oh, we can talk one more thing here. I like how many young players they played in the secondary, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's where you're starting to see turnover.
I didn't see a whole lot of like Nate Andrews out there. I saw a little too much of Trey Marshall, to be honest. You know, like if these guys are just going to repeatedly make the same mental mistakes, the veterans, then let's go with some younger guys. And they did. You saw more Stanford Samuels. You saw more Thompson Esfeldin, you saw more Cyrus Fagan, and they certainly had some of their young moments, right? I mean, I'm not sure what the heck Hamso was doing. I know he told Jimbo. Jimbo said that he saw one of those guys open. He thought he could take it back, right? Which would be like 102 yards.
Yeah, it'd be like 103 yards. I mean, good for you, Hamso.
I mean, that's okay. like I want to dub in the Auburn guy on the kick six here. He ran it back 109 or whatever that was. Yeah, that was kind of silly. Fagan goes for an absolute kill shot on the quarterback when he's the only guy near the quarterback, so it probably is not the best time to maybe go for that. But, hey, man, they're freshmen. They're learning. They'll be better. What else do you want to talk about? I know we got a lot of questions this week. We got some questions about the game. Most questions were not about the game. I think people are – I will say this. It's interesting how people's like enthusiasm about the program and stuff right now are not matching up necessarily with like Jimbo's enthusiasm about the win, right? Like he seems like real excited about the Syracuse win, and I don't think people even took like a full 24 hours to celebrate it. They're just not into it.
No, man. I mean, think about what you saw in the last 5 minutes in that game, and think about the fact that you had to get a fumble overturned. I mean, just, yeah. Or your defense goes down, craps the bed again, and you get bailed out by a field goal. So I can certainly understand people not being thrilled with that result and what they watched, but you know, that's their priority or that's their prerogative as a fan, and they can do as you wish. I was happy to hear that, you know, by all accounts, the locker room was a positive place, and the kids themselves seem to enjoy that. They worked real hard and, you know, don't deserve to get crapped on at the end of a game every time. So I was happy for them. But I don't blame the fan base if they have some much larger concerns, and facts and aspects of that game only serve to I'm sure, have people double down on some of their pre-existing fears and direction of where the program may be headed. Bud, we'll take a moment real quickly to thank our friends at For the Table Restaurant Group, Madison Social in particular. They've been with us since day one, and we always talk about the way that they've integrated themselves or woven themselves into this university and town, and just how much of a great upgrade they've been to kind of all aspects of that area of town and the experience that a lot of people get to take part in on Saturdays, but kind of throughout the week. And Bud, no better way to have that kind of judged and recalled upon than by what they won three of Tallahassee Best Awards and three awards I think they've won the past 3 years. Is that correct?
Yeah, congratulations to our buddies there with the Ford Table Restaurant Group, Madison Social, Best Bar, Best Brunch, and Best Happy Hour. We're not lying, folks. It is the best spot. So go hit it up. It's great for both college age folks and as well as older crowd. Had some awesome feedback, by the way, from some listeners who are parents, have students at Florida State, and they actually went to brunch with them, and they were like, man, this was awesome, great recommendation. They were sending us pictures, and we love to hear that. I'll tell you, after the weekend that I think some parents probably had up there, they may need to actually experience maybe a little detox vibe this week. And Madso, in addition to winning those fine awards, they have their kale salad, which you wouldn't normally think that, but it's a sweet potato kale salad. Kale, roasted sweet potato, sunflower seeds, candied cranberries, goat cheese, and a poppy seed vinaigrette. It's a very nice lunch menu item there, for sure, in addition to their normal favorites, the BLT dip, the wings, the burgers, awesome sandwiches. Just a great spot to go to and hit up. And, man, that's congratulations to them. They really do a great job, man. We're glad to have them as sponsors.
Sitting here doing this, recording late on Monday evening, and I see the clock strikes midnight and that it's now 11:07. Go ahead and offer the 10-day reminder of the 17th. As always, Reuben Day at Madso. Much better product that you're going to find anywhere else. I saw where a certain large national sandwich chain, which might have employed a really shady character to hawk its product at one point in time, is offering a Reuben sandwich for the following week. That's hilarious. Hilarious to look at that thing, too, that they're trying to sell. Don't have any worries about some fake product like that being thrown your way when you go to Madison Social. Reuben, once a month, they do it on the 17th every month, and it's really one of the best sandwiches I've ever had, and we'll just offer that as kind of a week and a half reminder to people to go ahead and put it out there and mark that that date on your calendar.
Yes, do not eat Reuben's at Subway. Eat Reuben's at Madison Social. One is good. The other is, I'm not going to, I think y'all get it. So what did you make of Jimbo Fisher's press conference today?
Yeah, it's an interesting thing. And I think, maybe as a fan base, we get too quick to try to dissect everything and be offended by the coach or have a problem. So I don't in general whole love breaking down everything a coach says. But there was some stuff said today that just seemed like there was a little bit of a pugnacious nature to it and a desire to hammer down on a couple facts. I mean, I thought the want to talk about facilities was a bizarre thing to do. One, Clemson's not in a better place as a program right now than you are because of facilities. And two, when you're 3-5, I don't know that, bitching and moaning that you don't have all the newest bells and whistles is the best idea either.
When the program has literally given you like everything you asked for, not too bright. One thing I've noticed now is that it used to be Jimbo would he would always kind of on bad questions, Mm-hmm. But now he just seems like he gives the exact same type of answer to every question, whether it's like a good question that's well thought out, reasonable, respectful, but now it doesn't matter, right? And you saw, didn't do the normal Sunday interviews he does either. To be kind of checking out. Won't answer any questions about injuries or personnel or player availability or anything like that. Practice is closed. Yet gets mad when people write things about the program. Well, pick your poison. That stuff works if you win, but you're not winning.
You just went to Boston College and suffered what one could put a very good argument, and one that I might even agree with, the worst loss in the history of the program. If you're going to get your feathers ruffled because people had bad things to say.
Oh, when he got mad at Ira?
What are we doing?
That was so ridiculous. I know there's not a lot of love lost between Warchant and Tomahawk, but sticking up for Ira here, there's certainly guys in this beat I wouldn't stick up for. Ira's a really good writer. I respect the hell out of him, and he does a great job.
He's a professional.
Yeah, man, that guy really, you could stick him on any beat in the country, he would do an excellent job. And for Fisher to get pissed at him like that, sorry, Jimbo, your kids did quit on your coaches. They don't like the assistant coaches. I know some guys on this team personally who still kind of like Jimbo, but think the assistant coaches are trash, and they don't like them. Like, on a personal level, they don't like them. It's not surprising that they quit on the coaches. They didn't quit on each other. but they definitely quit on the coaches. We'll use the Q word, quit. And if you are looking at the tape and you really don't think they quit, that's a you problem, because they definitely did. So that was kind of silly for him to get, you know, get mad about that. I know we got a lot of questions about the press conference today, which I'm surprised that many people are actually still watching the press conferences. But, man, I agree with you that, like, the overplaying, like, the importance of the Syracuse win, and then, like, talking about the facilities that much. The third time he talked about it, Corey Clark, like, asked him a question about it. So I get that, certainly. But, man, the first couple times, like, the first time he's asked the question about Clemson, and the first thing he goes to is facilities. Really? That was hey, Jimbo's not an idiot, right? So I don't know why. What's his end game here, man?
Yeah, I don't know. And the fact that the facilities thing was hit on as many times, there seemed to be like a pre-existing want to try to hammer something home, and that was going to be the message that it was that was delivered. So I'm really not sure. I don't know if he's there's a ton of speculation that we can make, but I don't know if he's trying to not necessarily create excuses for himself, but plant the seeds as to in his mind as to maybe why he's seen Clemson shift into the gear that they have and turn into the program that they have. But, you know, Clemson's been signing some of the best recruits in the country for 6 or 7 years now. This all didn't just turn because Clemson, you know, opened the door to that ridiculous facility that they have. This is something that program has built itself up, and certainly they've elevated their facilities, but so is everybody else, and so is Florida State. So just curious, the intent and the repetition with which he hit the facilities message.
All right, so, yeah, what is the intent there? Because, like, there's no way Jimbo is dumb enough to think that, like, talking about the facilities thing after he already, you know, kind of botched that thing in week, what, 2 or 3 when he talked about the little adjustments they had made and really, really angered some people who are big-time boosters that we actually know, right? And they thought that, like, their donations and contributions to the program were being belittled. What, like, there's no way he thinks right now is a good time to talk about this as far as, like, actually getting something done. So is he trying to, like, justify to himself, weirdly, like, this is the reason they're not winning? Because they don't have a football-only facility? Or is, I don't know, man. This came off as weird to me, you know?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, there's aspects that did. And like you said, the relationship as a whole has gotten to a point where it's going to be tough to glean a whole lot out of these press conferences, if that's something you really try to do. But this in of itself was just a little bit of an odd series of actions and an odd course of action to take with the season that you've had. And in all likelihood, the result that you're going to take on Saturday.
It floats something at you. This is a sports media reference, but remember Bill Simmons?
Yes, I certainly remember him. I think it's fascinating that guy's profile has shrunk as much as it has in the past 24 months that you'd have to legitimately ask that question in general. But yeah, certainly familiar with him.
He had a setup from the outside. I mean, just seemed amazing, you know? And yet he would, like, publicly pick fights with ESPN. And, like, people were like, in sports media would speculate. Like, is he trying to, like, pick a fight with ESPN to, like, give himself an excuse to leave, or, like, convince himself that he needs to leave, or that he should leave or something? It was weird, right? It's like, why would you leave? Like, there's not really a better option for you, at least from the outside. It doesn't seem like complaining about ESPN publicly was going to help ESPN change things, right? And it didn't. In fact, I think they suspended him for it. Is he giving himself an out here or something?
It's a good question, man, and probably not one that we'll be able to answer tonight, but it was something that you have, as fans or people that monitor the program, you have to kind of try to go and find an answer to, because I don't think that was just happenstance. So
no, I think it was purposeful. I'm not exactly sure what the purpose was behind it.
I'm not sure your theory is wildly off, but it's something that we'll sit and watch and kind of keep an eye out from afar. But another question that we had, and somewhat related to what we're talking about, question states, is Jimbo really going to try to hold Florida State's feet to the fire with the Texas A&M rumors this year? If so, what will Florida State do? Now, the Texas A&M rumors have existed for, oh gosh, I don't know, 10 weeks, 8 weeks, something like that. And we've talked about them before, but I think this probably the most recent reference is that you had a A&M guy go on Feinbaum and mention Fisher's name in particular when discussing what might be in play for that job if Sumlin were to move on.
Right, and the A&M guy is Brent Zerneman. He's with the Houston Chronicle, which is an enormous newspaper. and one of the better ones in the country. So it's not like it's some like Aggie Rebel Yell or whatever the you know, like
right,
like a legitimate guy who I don't think is just throwing out names. We've also heard that A&M would be extremely interested in Jimbo Fisher. So this to me is different, right? Because Fisher's leverage is largely gone. Last year, you know, he wasn't signed to that enormous deal, and they were actually winning some games in the previous year and the previous year and basically every year that he used some sort of job opening to leverage something he wanted at Florida State. This year, I got to think, man, I think Florida State's going to tell him pound sand. If he goes and is like, you know, hey, hypothetically, if he came to them and said, hey, I'm going to go to A&M unless you give me this, this, and this. If I'm the AD, I'm like, all right, walk. Cool.
Right.
I mean, I'm looking at the numbers of coaches who actually win at a national championship level past like year five or six, and the odds are just so overwhelmingly against it. I'm like, okay, cool. Peace. And to be honest, I think he could do a great job in their school, and I think there's still some chance he could continue to do a great job at Florida State. But, man, he's not dealing from a position of strength here, I don't think. And I'm not saying he's actually going to try and do this. This is just what the question asks.
I think the greatest compliment that you can give to Jimbo Fisher is that he's elevated the Florida State job back to a place where it's one of the most desirable jobs in the country, and that Florida State would be in a pretty good place at this point. In fact, an exceptionally good place. If it had to go back out on the market. And in large part, that's thanks to Jimbo Fisher. It is one of the premier places to coach ball at the college level. And in large part to the efforts that he's made over the last 7 or 8 years, he has taken the job back to a place that Florida State fans, at least in their mind, think it should be in kind of the in the pantheon of college football.
I mean, it's absolutely one of the best jobs in the country. I think you can argue that it's very easily a top 10 job and might be a top top 5 type job. It's extremely easy to win at Florida State, man. You get SEC level resources with an ACC schedule. All right. There's no way.
It's almost certainly a top 10 job. I'd have a hard time having any list that doesn't have it. It's one of the best 7 jobs in the country.
Yeah.
It really is.
I think people would be shocked at the I think there's some really elite coaches who are in year one at their current programs who would immediately drop what they're doing and come here. I think there's some really established guys who you'd think, okay, he seems really happy there. He would never leave. He's got a great gig. I think they would come. I got to tell you, though, man, there's no Wake Forest or Cuse or Boston College in the SEC West, right? That is much more of a grind than the ACC Atlantic. And I think the ACC Atlantic's a damn good division, but the bottom of the division is just different. You know, it's not the same level. In addition, A&M has to play every year Auburn, Bama, LSU. They got to play both Mississippi schools and got to play Arkansas. Now, Arkansas is not very good this year at all, but traditionally they're at least decent. They're a consistent bowl team. And you got to recruit against this team called Texas, which currently is, I think, number 2 in the national recruiting rankings. Just pulling this up here. They've been killing it lately. Tom Herman is no joke, especially on the recruiting trail. Yeah, Texas is number 2 right now. They got 15 blue chips already committed and just 3 3 stars. They are not screwing around. That's not a super easy job. And I'm not here begging for Jimbo Fisher to stay and look, obviously A&M's not even open yet. We should probably note that, or maybe should have noted that earlier. But man, if he has demands, it can't be a real long list if he expects to get what he wants. Not with the product you put on the field this year and not with the way that you've really angered important people.
I think we talk about the A&M position now because that's the one that we've kept an eye out for a while. But the carousel of college football is going to continue to spin, and there'll be positions that come open. So whether it's A&M or anybody else, I completely agree. If Jimbo Fisher or Sexton attempts to put a whole lot of leverage on anybody at Florida State, I'm not sure it'll be all that wise of a play this year. So something that, in my opinion, will kind of resolve itself.
Yeah.
If it was to present itself.
I'm not necessarily convinced that A&M is the best job that might come after Jimbo this offseason. Mm-hmm. We'll just have to wait and see. Ingram, I know something you and I were talking about before the show was, did you feel like Fisher was kind of getting after certain position segments or coaches more in his post-game comments and his comments today?
I thought there were some criticisms that I hadn't, and I don't get to catch every Jimbo press conference, so I don't want to act like I'm a expert at him, but there were some moments that stood out to me that I thought he was probably more critical of and the language that he used in particular was more critical about some position groups and at times even players. I thought he brought himself back from that after a point, but there were choice words directed at maybe his offensive line and his receiver coach that I hadn't otherwise remembered hearing.
Yeah, I mean, he's complaining about young receivers not running the right routes, and I think, hey, that probably plays into, is your offense too tough for some of these young receivers, and, you know, wish he'd get the veterans back. And he did do a good job. I'll give Jimbo credit on this. I think he did a good job to walk back the initial because he was initially criticizing the players, I thought, a lot. I was like, oh, man. He's, you know, he was kind of doing the whole, like, we put him in position to make plays, they didn't make plays thing. But then he kind of started walking that back, and I think his second criticism matched up more with what actually happened in the game. That was encouraging. Earlier today, we tweeted a conversation from our Slack chat. This is interesting. Andrew Miller, who's one of our beat writers for Tomahawk, said that he thought UAB would be favored at Florida. And initially, everybody was like, no, you're crazy. But I got to tell you, man, I don't think Florida's going to be an underdog at home to UAB, but I do think I'll be betting on UAB in that game. And it would not surprise me if UAB beat them. Like, UAB won at Southern Miss. Mm-hmm. Southern Miss is a better team than Florida. All right. They hung tough with Louisiana Tech. They hung tough with Middle Tennessee State. I know UAB didn't have a football program last year, so that's certainly notable, but they might actually be better on a neutral field than Florida, and the home field part of that might be the only thing that actually is saving Florida for this this spot.
You get much of a home field boost after going to Missouri and getting your brain beat in, coming back home to Gainesville, you think?
Well, I mean, this is the game that everybody skips, right? I mean, my neighbors are season ticket holders, and they're not going.
What game do you think they catch more flack for if they were to lose this? Would Georgia Southern or UAB?
I've got to. Like, well, do they play Georgia Southern this year?
No. I'm just saying in the
Southern because it's an FCS team.
In the Mount Rushmore of horribly embarrassing losses. Yeah, Georgia Southern was, you're right, a lower level of ball. But as you also correctly pointed out, UAB didn't have a football team last year. So, it'd be great to put on the scales come next week and us to maybe have a deeper dive as to what exactly is the more unexplainable loss that Florida suffered recently.
By the way, you want a key stat for another game this weekend? You want to guess where Notre Dame ranks in terms of explosive runs in the nation?
I do not know.
Number 3 in the nation.
Ooh,
okay. That's pretty solid. And they're behind two spread option teams. So pretty solid. Really good run game. Miami's defense, on the other hand, if you adjust for opponent, 65th in the nation at preventing explosive runs. That does not really seem like a matchup that favors Miami. Like, Miami's very good at preventing explosive passes this year, but as far as like preventing explosive runs, not so much. And Notre Dame just like repeatedly hits home runs on the ground. That's I think the number one key thing to watch there. I think Notre Dame might be my strongest play of the week, and I really hope that people get on this Miami train so I can take them at 2.5, and that'd be perfect. Let's get on that.
All right, bud. A little bit of a touchy question here, but we'll do our best to address it. What do you say about the rumors that a sizable portion of young players would potentially be looking to transfer after this year?
I mean, I've certainly heard the rumors. Let me break this down best I can. I know for a fact there are two players who have told either me or one of our writers that they will transfer if their position coach is not changed.
If he's not, that's amazing.
Correct.
That's amazing.
Like if the guy's back, the player's not back. Now, they both play positions that I think that will definitely be changed. So I wouldn't worry about that too much. 10 players transferring to me seems like really kind of crazy. I don't buy that. I know I've heard that, but I haven't heard that from anybody I trust, right? Like, to me, it's just from like message board people or people who email us. And look, we love y'all emailing us, but there are certain people I know who have like legitimate connections to the program who I trust more, or talking to like the players or their high school coaches or their parents. Like, those are, to me, are better sources. However, I will tell you this. Jimbo has ended some meetings recently by saying, if you don't want to be here, sign the papers.
Yeah.
And the papers are the transfer papers, the release papers.
Right, exactly. Request for release.
Why do you think you say that? To me, you say that if you've heard rumors of discontent, or, you know, maybe guys acting like they don't want to be there.
Mm-hmm. I would say that you're always going to hear rumors like this when you're staring at a season that before this week you were 2-5. I mean, just with the, if you're going to tell me a team's 2-5, 3-5, and a team that had the roster and the expectations that this one did, I would expect this type of rumors to start to come up. Now, 10 is a little over the top. I don't think there's any truth to that. Look, as recently as week 3, I started hearing about potential kids that wanted to transfer at one particular position group that I think you may be referring to right now. There's certainly some kids that aren't, you know, wonderfully content on this roster. And that's just what you'd expect. Until you start to see some mass exodus, I wouldn't necessarily worry about it a whole lot. I think this is just kind of par for the course when you have a season that's as disappointing as this one is.
Yeah, I totally agree with you on that. I don't think you're going to have 10 guys transfer. That'd be kind of nuts.
I will say, and I don't want to dwell on it, I've never heard that a kid, or let me just say it's exceptionally rare that a kid is like, yeah, the position coach, the guy who maybe didn't play the main role in my recruiting, but certainly a guy that I developed a large relationship with and played some role in me choosing to go here, I can't stand him. And he's so inept that if he's there, he'll single-handedly be the reason that I leave. That's pretty strong.
Yeah, I mean, it's pretty clear. Some recruiting talk here. I think this is, you know, something we need to talk about. Florida State is currently still the top 10 in recruiting. At this point, I don't think they're going to finish in the top 10. I'd be pretty surprised if they do. The early signing day is going to hurt them because they're schools that are actually doing well, who have established relationships and who are not going to have to clear, you know, kind of clean house with the coaching staffs. Those schools are probably going to do better. Florida State right now is going to have to try to convince some kids to wait and just, you know, like kind of wait and see who we sign and which coaches we bring on and then take a look at us, right? Come take some January official visits. You don't necessarily have to sign early. But I got to tell you, man, talking to coaches at our schools, they think you're going to sign like 75% of their players on early signing day. They're treating it as the regular signing day.
Mm-hmm.
And the second signing day, like the more traditional date, is going to be like just a couple extra kids type thing. That's how they think it's going to go down. Well, I guess we'll see. Nobody knows because we've never had one of these. But, man, I got to ask you the other day, I was like, okay, you know, if you're recruiting against Florida State, what would you say? And I was like, well, okay, there are certain spots that I'd love to recruit against them in Tampa for sure. I'd love to recruit a receiver against them because all I got to do is hold up two fingers. One, two, 10 seasons, 10 drafts, two receivers drafted, period. Out of how many, what do they sign, 30 receivers in that time? Those are terrible odds, son. You can't like, look, man, you're good, but everybody else is rated just as good as you. Why would you go there and not get drafted? Because that's seriously what teams are telling these kids. And it's smart to do it. It's just good salesmanship, right? If I'm selling a car and I know you just went across the dealership across the street and now you're coming to see me and I know that car you test drove has like a one-star safety rating, right? Like, man, you're going to look like a splattered crash test dummy if you rear end somebody. It's just smart. And I know you're thinking about the offensive line thing too.
Certainly haven't done yourself any favors with some of the play that your offensive line does and some of the communication problems that you've had and the fact that you've just got your quarterback routinely over the past 2 years just laying in a chalk outline behind you far too many times. And it was used against you on the recruiting trail with one kid, Justin Fields. And it's not, even if the Justin Fields commitment and recruitment had never taken place, I'd still sit here and talk to you about the fact that your offensive line is being used aggressively against you in other positions, not just quarterback, to negatively recruit. So to an extent, there comes a time where perception becomes reality. You're having kids talked about that they may be making a mistake as far as their longevity in the game if they go and play with you. You're having major ESPN personalities talking about that your offensive line's the worst unit in the nation. Whether or not that's correct, I personally don't think it is. But there comes a time where that kind of ball has gotten rolling down the hill so fast that it's kind of gotten away from you and it's starting to bleed into other aspects of the program and recruiting in general.
Like when opposing programs send a hit tape to a top quarterback recruit you're recruiting?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yep. Absolutely.
Look, man, sometimes perception becomes reality. And I'm not saying that they're worse in college football. They're certainly not. But if that's a perception of some people, then eventually you got to make a change. So I guess what we're saying here is, look, and we already think major coaching changes are coming, assuming Fisher's here next year. And even if he's not, then, I mean, obviously. But this is just another reason why you need to make some seriously drastic changes, because the recruiting thing is hurting. I got to tell you, too, Jaren Williams announced today where he was going to take some official visits. This is the Kentucky commit, and Florida State's not on that list. Ingram, I don't think that's a good thing, dude. You know, I don't know what they're doing at quarterback recruiting now.
I don't know what they're doing at quarterback either.
And I got to tell you, like, Jimbo's a quarterback freak.
Some of the stories that I've heard recently involving quarterback recruitment, I honestly follow this program closely. I'm fortunate to be able to do a podcast with somebody like yourself and fortunate to have been a fan. I can't make sense of what I'm hearing, some of the things that it's just bizarre. I don't know what we're doing at quarterback. So, you know, we'll move on and we'll find somebody there. But just curious as to the direction that we're going in right now.
Well, ask you this. Jimbo, and you're planning on being here next year? Aren't you really trying to make damn sure you're going to get a quarterback recruit in here? Like, to me, this is a concerning sign. And I'm not saying, like that he's not trying, and I'm not saying, but man, like, not to have any traction on this, and I'm going to write about this week too, but that's concerning. That's kind of like, I don't know, man. Like, if I was going to leave, I wouldn't really care about what quarterback I had coming into Florida State, you know? I also think that there's an issue here to where his recruiting pitch has gone down a little bit, and that's Carson Wentz, Jared Goff, Deshaun Watson, right?
Jameis Winston hadn't done you any favors either.
Yeah, I mean, look, Winston, I still think is a feather in your cap for sure. I mean, number one overall, and they should have shut him down.
A lot of recency bias in that statement. I just mean his play the last two or three weeks. Obviously, I'm not speaking.
Right.
I'm talking about the same thing that you were talking about, and that is some of the performance that you've seen on Sunday. And Winston has not had the season that he wanted to or probably expected to have.
He actually got hurt against the Giants, and then hurt it more against the Vikings. And then I think the hit that everybody noticed it on was the Falcons. So I think they should have shut him down a lot earlier, personally. But look, man, Deshaun came out of like a, if you want to call it, a Mickey Mouse system at Clemson, and is balling out in the league. Jared Goff came from the air raid, like perhaps the first successful quarterback to do so. And he's having a great year for the Rams. You know, Carson Wentz is running like a college system with the Eagles and balling out. The Chiefs run a very college system. They got beat on Sunday night or Sunday afternoon by the Dallas Cowboys, who run an extremely college system, right? Mm-hmm. Like, they're taking their franchise quarterback and running the option with it. Jimbo's pitch that, like, his system is going to get you more ready to be drafted by the NFL, I'm not saying it's not true, but I'm saying it's less effective when you have all these spread quarterbacks out there who are able to succeed in the league. And you have the league very seriously here kind of coming to these QBs and meeting them halfway, right, and saying, okay, we're going to do a lot of this stuff that y'all did in college because it actually works pretty well. And I got to tell you, man, if the major thing, the major benefit, I think, to running that system in college, the Jimbo system, is the fact that you can pitch quarterback recruits on it. If that advantage is gone, scrap it. Period, because there's much easier ways to score points, right? But I do think that, like, the ceiling for this system is still incredibly high if you get the right quarterback in there, if you get a Jameis type kid in there. But it's hard to do. Your margin for error is much smaller with Jimbo's system than it is with some of these spread systems. And if that quarterback recruiting ability is diminishing, then you have some real problems.
Yeah, I very much agree with what you just said, and I think it's a great point. If this system doesn't put you in a place where, I'm not saying you're expected to sign this kid, but that you aren't able to, you know, to sit in the living room of one of the top two or three quarterbacks each year and be a final contender for him because of what you're able to do and past results, then completely agree with you. If you're not in a race to sign like one of the kids every year, then I think you go away from that. And to be honest with you, Florida State has had some hits and misses on the recruiting trail at quarterback recently, and certainly has had some real bad luck. But, you know, they went after Fields and fell short. But other than that, I don't know that they've been involved in a whole lot of mega recruits either at that particular position.
You knew who's got a mega recruit committed, right?
You referencing Gainesville?
No, A&M, 2019, Grant Gunnell.
Yeah, they do. Yeah, a kid that Jimbo might be fairly familiar with.
Mm-hmm. Anyway, that was just something interesting to me. They really do need to make some changes there for recruiting purposes. That's probably good, man.
So we'll be back, do a little Clemson preview, and probably, you know, carry on some of the conversations and questions that we weren't able to get to here this time. So Just want to thank you, October. We don't tend to get a whole lot into analytics or anything like this, but October is the most successful month. This by far has been the most successful year we've ever had. Just want to appreciate or say thank you and know that you are appreciated as a listener and all that you guys have done to spread the word and support our sponsors and everything else. So much appreciated. These things are just a fantastic thing that we're able to do. Incredibly grateful that we're able to do these twice a week. And until next time, we will talk to you soon. Thank you again for all the 5-star reviews that we've had. Those are a huge deal. As I always say, a disproportionately important determiner as to the importance of a podcast. And know that the 45 seconds that you guys take to fill out one of those is very much appreciated by myself, Bud, and Judson.